Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
By shortwave and satellite, this is the Dutch International Service.
Play the music, Sal.
Media Network, the weekly communications magazine for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
And I just want to say, that makes him cool.
He's hot, actually, here in Studio 11. Hello and welcome to a rather special documentary edition of the programme. We'll have news from Saipan, space and Shakespeare country later on, but we start with the subject of medium wave AM stereo. No, I'm not joking. For several decades, engineers have toyed with the idea of having stereo music on AM medium wave, as well as VHF, where it's already firmly established. In fact, it's because FM has become the stereo music section of the dial in many parts of the world that good old medium wave radio has started running into financial problems. In North America, recent figures show that people between 18 and 35 years of age rarely consider listening to medium wave for music. The quality's better on FM, and it's in stereo, they say. The AM stations in North America have at last started to seriously fight back.
Spring Fever, 77 WABC.
WABC.
One of the old WABC jingles, because 1 year ago, what was once a famous New York music station switched to news and talk. Mark Mason, its director of programming and production, explains why.
With the advent of successful FM stations in the marketplace, perhaps for the preceding decade, and the decline of AM music stations in the marketplace, it became apparent that it would be practically impossible for AM music stations to compete on any significant level with FM. That, coupled with the fact that news talk stations in the marketplace were doing quite well on the AM dial, logic sort of pointed the way.
But of course, there are medium wave stations that would rather retain the music if possible. And four different US manufacturers eventually came up with four different ways of doing it, each one, in theory, incompatible with the other three. People then waited around for the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C., which regulates matters like this, to pick the best system so AM stereo could rapidly become reality. Last year, the FCC decided it couldn't decide, approved all four systems, and said that the marketplace should decide who'd come up with the best idea. Four companies then started knocking on the doors of the larger AM radio stations: Harris Corporation, Motorola, Magnavox, and Kahn Communications. The marketplace is still deciding, as we'll see. Some of the companies are cross that the FCC didn't make a choice. I asked Dick Harrisick, who's manager of the AM stereo broadcast equipment for Motorola, whether AM stereo will die like quadraphonic FM did in the 70s, if the incompatible systems remain alongside each other.
If it goes multiple systems, it will probably lay there just like quad.
What about the radio stations themselves? Are they tending to wait until a system's been decided upon, or have some actually committed themselves to the Motorola system?
The bulk of the stations are still waiting. They're waiting for AM stereo program to bed down. However, there are a number of stations that are going up, and we're putting up 12 to 15 a month.
And what about the audio fidelity compared to FM? Can you offer any extra fidelity?
No, not any extra. FM has a capability of 15 kilohertz. AM stereo also has the capability of 15 kilohertz. However, if the station has adjacent channel problems, you may have to cut back on that. And certainly in nighttime operation, you can't go that wide. If you have radios that are built with two-step or three-step bandpass, then you can start to compete with FM fairly nicely during daytime hours. The main area that AM stereo shines is in a vehicle, in a car. FM is subject to multipath problems. It's subject to short range. You can drive out from under an FM signal fairly quickly. AM, you can go 200-300 miles and still get very acceptable stereo reception. FM won't do that.
Is it true, I mean, if you've got an FM stereo receiver, you notice that your coverage area is much smaller than FM in mono. What about AM in stereo? Is that coverage area also smaller than the mono signal?
No. No, the coverage is the same for AM stereo or AM mono.
To someone who's not all that technical, can you explain how the AM stereo system works as far as Motorola is concerned?
It is similar to the way color information is transmitted in color TV. What you do is you put the carrier in quadrature. In other words, you have what amounts to two transmitters that are 90 degrees out of phase.
But as far as a station is concerned, you're talking about two transmitters. Does that mean that they have to modify or, in fact, purchase a second transmitter to go AM stereo or not?
No, I use the two transmitter as an illustration. Actually, what we do is we generate the RF carrier, and then we generate a second RF carrier that is 90 degrees removed from that. It's all off of one transmitter.
And how much would it cost a station to go AM stereo, roughly?
For our system, the exciter, which generates the RF and encodes the audio, and the modulation monitor, which now decodes that and shows that the station is operating legally, that pair of equipment costs $10,000.
The other systems cost roughly the same. At the risk of oversimplification, you can then say that the Motorola, Harris and Magnavox systems are variations on the same idea, putting the left and right channels out of phase and letting the radio receiver do the detection work.
66 WNBC.
WNBC and some 50 other stations have chosen another fourth system developed by Leonard Kahn of Kahn Communications. The signal you're listening to at the moment is AM, amplitude modulated, from Radio Netherlands. Simplifying again, you can say it consists of two parts. First, there's the carrier wave, which puts our signal at a certain point on the dial. And then either side are two sidebands, which carry the music or speech information. There's an upper sideband and a lower sideband, which are normally identical. And if you're using a shortwave communications receiver at the moment, you'll know that you can select between upper or lower sideband if you want. So is the idea of the Kahn system to put the left-hand channel of the music on one sideband, say, and the right-hand channel on the other?
Exactly, and then the problem is to make the envelope clean. That's your basic problem. You see, I'm certain, I'm certain AM radio will, in a few years, in your lifetime, will become all single sideband for mono transmission, suppressed carrier. For music, will be stereo, and it'll be reduced carrier probably, just plain single sideband. Ours is a natural step in that direction. Indeed, you can receive our signal with a normal independent sideband receiver. Stereo will equip the listeners with independent sideband receivers. Now, think what that means. Number one, it means that if you just take a balance control in a stereo, you can turn off one of the sidebands. So if you've got adjacent channel and you just want to listen to talk now, you just turn off that sideband and you've got 20, 30 dB improvement in adjacent channel interference. It's moving very rapidly. We're very pleased with the marketplace decision and the progress.
So you prefer this idea of competing?
Oh, absolutely.
Using the two sidebands idea means that in theory, the stereo image should be retained, even if the signal is received via the ionosphere. This layer above the Earth, responsible for propagating shortwave signals and medium-wave signals too at night, does terrible things to the phase of the signal, especially during fading conditions, with the result that the left and right channels appear to move around in your head when the phasing systems are being used for AM stereo. In practice, though, many US medium-wave commercial stations are simply interested in their stereo signal as heard within the so-called ground wave reach of the transmitter. That simply means that the signal hasn't gone up to the ionosphere on its path between transmitter and receiver, but directly from sender to your radio. Under those conditions, all four systems sound very much the same to the inexperienced ear.
Media Network Transatlantic Special.
in New York, we were able to purchase the only AM stereo radio at present on the mass market for about $75. It's called the Sony SRF-100. Until 4 days ago, though, some 60 stations using the Harris system were forbidden to use their stereo system. For on Thursday, August 25th, Harris was forced to tell stations using its system that the FCC had ordered it off the air. The commission were worried that a slight modification Harris made, since it filed a type acceptance a year ago, would lead to distortion on ordinary mono medium-wave radios, above a limit of 5%, if strictly the right or left channels only were transmitted. Remember, all these AM stereo signals must be listenable on regular mono receivers too. Harris has disputed this FCC finding, and in fact on Sunday, Harris AM stereo stations were granted an experimental stereo license to put the system back on the air, pending further FCC investigation. This came at a rather bad time for Harris AM stereo radio stations, many of whom had planned huge advertising campaigns. Some have remained loyal to Harris. Others, like KFI in Los Angeles, have chosen another system in the meantime. Marvin Collins is KFI's chief engineer. Why did they go to Motorola?
Well, it was mainly because of the problem that Harris ran into here with the type approval, and the FCC ordered that all Harris stations cease using it. They have since given them permission to go back and use it, but we didn't want to wait for that permission to come, so in the interim we went and switched over to Motorola. We are very happy with the Motorola, and we have no plans to switch back to the Harris. And we really don't worry about our signal out beyond the ground wave signal anyway, for the most part. Advertising, it's pretty much limited to the area covered by ground wave, as far as the mono signal is concerned. It did not bother that at all. That was a problem that we thought we were having with the Harris. We always had the feeling that it was adding some distortion, which we don't feel that the Motorola is doing.
Are you actually pushing the fact that you are AM stereo on air, though?
Yes. We bought a quantity of Sony radios, and we're giving those away as a promotional thing over the air. In fact, there's other stations in town here that are doing a similar thing, so we're trying to stir up interest in it as much as possible.
Are you trying to get it all standardized, though, or does everybody have their own opinion about the four systems?
Yeah, it's sort of everybody has their own opinion.
But do you see a clear-cut winner?
No.
Marvin Collins. Stations in larger markets with more money have often invested in more than one system to do their own trials. Ed Glab, engineering supervisor at WLS in Chicago, told me that his station was now back on the Harris system, which they preferred to the Kahn version, which they'd also been testing. WGN, WAIT and WMAQ, also in Chicago, though none of them are promoting this on the air, and each have their own opinions as to which is the best. But what about Magnavox? We rang Eric Cult, chief engineer at WOWO in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and asked him why they chose the Magnavox system.
A number of reasons. Probably the first one was we worked with it a lot before the system ever went, became legal in this country. But Magnavox was at the time located in Fort Wayne, and we had a special temporary authority for test purposes from the commission. And we were very impressed with the low distortion, the good separation figures that we didn't see available, at least on paper, from the other companies. Station also owns a Kahn system, but we do not use it.
Are there actually radio receivers available in your area? I mean, are you promoting AM stereo on air?
We promote it. We say we're on the air. Receivers are scarce, but not just now. This month's starting to come out. Sony, as you probably know, just came out with a four-system decoder receiver, which is kind of a compromise, but it works pretty well. I've listened to about three of them, and it does a pretty fair job. And Sansui is about to come out with a separate four decoder where it looks for the pilot tone of the four different systems and switches the proper decoder in.
That Sansui unit will come in two versions, an AM stereo tuner designed for use at home for around $400, and a car radio, also with the four systems built in, at a price yet to be announced.
Nine away from four. Here's Juice Newton bringing back a great one, breaking it to me gently.
A That's the sound of Motorola AM stereo, as used in Indiana. But of course you can't hear that at home because our transmitters aren't AM stereo. Sorry about that. But if you can listen to our sister programme, Radioactivity, broadcast by many local stations around the world, we will be demonstrating the capabilities of AM stereo there in a few weeks' time. There's interest in AM stereo in other parts of the world. AM stations in New Zealand are seriously studying it, as FM is becoming more widely known there. Whilst in Australia, the score at the moment is Kahn System, two stations, one to Harris, one to Motorola and one to Magnavox, though that score could change tomorrow. And a few of the Sony AM stereo radios are now being imported into Australia. Meanwhile in Canada, the four systems also prevail. CHUM in Toronto, for example, has just chosen the Kahn System. There's interest in South Africa too, or rather Radio 702 in Bafuditswana has plans to use it. Gary Edwards is the station's programme manager.
We're certainly looking at AM stereo. To be on AM is always a disadvantage, bearing in mind that the South African population by and large over the last 20 years became an FM audience, admittedly an FM mono audience. It's possibly unique in the world in that respect. There are obviously several systems available to us, and our chief engineer will shortly be in the United States looking at, again, what is available and what has been tested and proven. And then it's most likely that this is something we will go for, which will make us the first station possibly in Africa to go for AM stereo. It remains a disadvantage, nevertheless, because Johannesburg is particularly susceptible to electric storms in the summer. And there's nothing one can do about that. But there are relatively few costs involved. As a promotional idea, I think it would be good for the station.
It's unlikely, though, that medium wave stereo would have the impact here in Europe. Stations are much closer on the dial here, and even though stations in the United States are 10 kilohertz apart in theory, in practice, stations can open up their frequency response much wider, providing they don't cause interference. And this they do to obtain fidelity approaching or equaling VHF-FM stereo. At present, many AM stereo stations are a mixture of stereo and mono. Perhaps the fact that many haven't got around to making stereo AM jingles yet indicates a cautious approach. But the advertisers are quite happy to take full advantage of the stereo effect, in the startling way that only American radio knows how.
Oh, Grandpa.
Sorry, Tommy. I can't take you to the zoo today. My stomach is upset.
Mr. Morris is lying. He won't admit he has hemorrhoids, but he's about to find out.
Two things are worth noting about the new Sony AM stereo radio receiver. It has a two-position switch, one for the Kahn system, the other position for all the other three. So it's a compromise. People say the systems are all incompatible, but in practice you'll get stereo results on a Harris receiver when you listen to either Magnavox or Motorola, though not the best possible results, of course. Using headphones with an AM stereo radio in mono Europe is quite a weird experience. On the Kahn setting in particular, it has applications for long-distance listening. Suppose you select a medium-wave frequency with stations operating nearby. If you use AM stereo, you get an effect in your head similar to a cocktail party. Now, by concentrating, you can pick out the station you want far better than if you were listening to mono radio, where everything's in the middle. Perhaps a useful tool then for the hobbyist, though of course not a marketing point. The independent sideband idea of the Kahn system could have applications for shortwave, says Leonard Kahn.
Indeed, there will be shortwave transmissions of this system.
So you've had interest from shortwave stations in this?
Yes. It's a natural step, and it'll come that way. And, of course, they love the idea. It's going to equip their receivers with independent sideband receivers, so it gets rid of the jamming, because the jamming will be on direct frequency, but adjacent channel.
Is there any chance that you can use the two channels for separate programming, though?
Absolutely, and you certainly could handle it.
But what of the stations like WABC that have already switched to news and talk instead of music? Will they go back? Mark Mason of WABC again.
I think AM stereo is, simply put, too little too late. Had it come along perhaps 10 or 15 years ago, it might make an impact. By the time the FCC got around to approving a stereo system, and it was a long, long time in coming, coupled with the fact that there still are no AM stereo receivers out there, and it will be years and years before that's a factor in the marketplace. By then it'll probably be much too late, I think.
Meanwhile, though, AM stereo stations like KFRC in San Francisco are giving it all they've got.
KFRC reminds you not to pig out on your lunch hour. Get fit with the various exercises at the Embarcadero YMCA. Next session starts soon. Call them for details. 392-2191. It's 349.
And from developments on the ground to developments in space.
No other segment of time in the history of mankind has been filled with so many technological breakthroughs. Certainly none more exciting than the exploration of outer space. And now, this fall promises another first. When the Columbia Space Lab mission, labeled the STS-9, lifts off in October, it'll carry aboard, amongst its crew, Dr. Owen Garriott, a very special man, who ranks amongst his talents something he's kept since his childhood, his amateur radio license. And when he travels aboard his spacecraft, he's made special arrangements to keep tabs with his ham friends back on Earth via his ham radio. It'll be the first time in the history of man that civilians will be able to communicate directly with a man in outer space. Maybe you'd like to join in this celebration.
The launch of Columbia is scheduled for 11:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on October 28th. More news on that next week, when we also hope to follow up on our item about commercial shortwave radio. There's some detective work to be done to find out which shortwave radio station has shown interest in that Kahn AM radio stereo system. But, as you'll hear next week, it's not KYOI on Saipan, the rock music station blasting towards Japan on shortwave. They have other concerns, and so does Pete Myers, who's joining me now.
Well, KYOI are going to be joined by another shortwave station the day after tomorrow. As from October the 1st, the Far East Broadcasting Company, which is a religious operation, will start testing a 100-kilowatt shortwave transmitter. Robert Reynolds, who's vice president of FEBC Saipan, has just sent us the test schedule, which is 09 hours to 11 hours UTC on 15115 kilohertz, 11 to 13 hours on 15150, 13 hours to 15 hours on 9575 kilohertz, and 15 to 16 hours UTC on 15110 kilohertz. It's expected that the call sign of the new shortwave station will be KFBS, and the address for reception reports is Box 209, Saipan, 96950, America, the USA. Regular programs are expected to commence on November the 1st in Russian, Ukrainian, and Mandarin. Another two transmitters are also on the way and expected to enter service next year. Meanwhile, in Europe, the BBC is talking about a new transmitter site in England. It's been reported that plans for a £14 million transmitter site at Bearley near Stratford-upon-Avon were being investigated by two local authorities, worried about the effects this new transmitter site might have on the population living nearby. So we rang Peter Clemenson, head of the BBC Transmitter Site Acquisition Section in London, and asked him what they are planning.
Well, we're planning to increase the audibility of the external services, and part of this program is for six 300-kilowatt transmitters and associated aerials, approximately 30 aerials, on a site about 4 miles north of Stratford-on-Avon in Warwickshire.
That's at the place called Bearley, am I right?
That's right, at Bearley.
Now, why do you need this facility?
Over the next 10 years, it's the United Kingdom government's wish that the external services of the BBC's audibility is increased, and part of this programme is to provide modern transmitters and aerial arrays of sufficient power to maintain our audibility with the increased powers of our competitors.
You've got transmitter sites in other parts of the United Kingdom. I'm thinking of Rambersham, Skelton and Daventry that come to mind. Why can't you extend those?
We've considered all all the existing sites, and because of technical problems, including firing through arrays, we cannot extend any of the existing sites, and that, of course, is Skelton, Rampersham, Wolferton and Daventry.
You haven't mentioned Crowborough there. Does that mean that Bearley is going to replace Crowborough?
Yes, Communications Engineering Department of the Foreign Office operates Crowborough. And if we are successful in our planning application of Bearley, the old 2 × 100 kilowatt transmitters at Crowborough will cease to operate and the Crowborough site will return to the Ashdown Forest.
And who's going to operate Bearley then?
Bearley will be operated by the Communications Engineering Department of the Foreign Office. And as you know, they operate sites transmitting BBC programmes at Crowborough, at Orford Ness, which is the medium wave station that replaced Crowborough's Aspidestra installation, and also HF transmitters at Cyprus and the medium wave installation at Mazira in the Indian Ocean. So the external services of the BBC are not only transmitted by BBC transmitters staffed by BBC engineers, but also by the Communications Engineering Department of the Foreign Office.
Now, there has been opposition to the new Bearley site from local councils complaining that this may cause interference problems to people living in the area, and also perhaps even environmental dangers, as they put it. Can these be solved?
Yes. If I could take that question in two parts. The physiological question is very properly covered. In the United Kingdom, the official body responsible for guidance on radiation safety, which includes radio frequency radiation, is the National Radiological Protection Board. And we will ensure that the field strength limits proposed at Bearley will come well within the proposed future criteria.
So they're okay on physiological grounds. What about interference to, say, hi-fis and so forth that people might be operating in the area?
Well, the domestic equipment within the area, as you know, can be affected by radio frequency radiation. In our experience, this difficulty is encountered only within a very short distance of the site, between 1 and 2 kilometres from the site boundary. So we're quite confident that there is no insurmountable problem to domestic equipment in the immediate environment.
And the inquiry on that new site is due to open on November the 8th.
Radio Netherlands in magnificent mono.
And finally, if you missed Belgian radio's coverage of the passing away of the former monarch of that country, King Leopold III, remember that winter time has started there, as from last Sunday, so some broadcasts from the BRT in Brussels are now 1 hour later UTC. But on Sundays, they've reduced the length of their English broadcast, which now also starts 5 minutes earlier. The time is now between 1910 to 1930 UTC, for the DX programme Radio World, and the frequencies are 15590 kHz, intended for Africa, and 5895 and 1512 kHz for Europe. 5895 and 1512 kHz, those frequencies for Europe. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank all of you who've reacted to comments as to this programme's timeliness a few weeks ago, or otherwise. We've had an encouraging feedback to that, and we're almost up to date with the correspondence. In the coming weeks, we'll be looking at a forthcoming telecommunications conference here in Europe, and seeing how what's discussed there will affect good old shortwave. Remember, though, that your comments and contributions in the form of newspaper clippings relevant to the media in your part of the world are always of interest, and our address is simply Media Network, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, Hilversum, in the Netherlands. That address again is Media Network, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, Hilversum, in the Netherlands. Until next week, this is Jonathan Marks saying thanks for listening. Back soon. Bye for now. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.